It's Audio Mo, 2021, Day 5. Back in May, Christian Payne, documentally, many of you will know, interviewed me for his On The Line series he's doing, goes out to the subscribers of his newsletter, which I can highly recommend. Not just because you get interviewed by him, because that's not part of it. It's a really good news. He sends a newsletter out once a week on a Friday. And there's always not just one interesting thing in there. There's a whole bunch of interesting things. And he sends you off on a little trip down rabbit holes of the internet. And it's well worth it, as far as I'm concerned. But, he interviewed me. And one of the questions he asked me was, what's the proudest thing, what was the thing I was most proud of in my work, audio work? And without even missing a beat, I knew what it was. And it was an interview I did with a Bletchley Park veteran called Jeannie Cocci, who had basically spent 75 years thinking she'd been useless and that's why she'd been sent to Bletchley. So I thought I would share that interview for today's Audio Mo. I actually used it again last year when I was doing some extra content for Bletchley for during the first lockdown. So you can listen to the younger me from a year ago introducing that. Jeannie actually died last year, bless her. And with all the restrictions and everything, the family haven't been able to have a memorial service. So they've really kindly invited me to the memorial service, which is going to be in a couple of months now. So please give it a listen. She was brilliant. She had the biggest smile you could ever imagine. It was lovely. And it's lovely that she got to spend the last, few years of her life knowing that she had done something useful. So enjoy. Bye. Now for this final selection, slightly longer than the other interviews, we're going back to 2016. What myself and our original host, Catherine Lynch, wanted to do in that episode was focus on one of our oral history volunteers. They're an amazing bunch of people and they go around the country interviewing our veterans so we can save their stories for generations to come. So on what I remember was, I think the hottest day of the year, we met David Stern, one of these volunteers, as he went to go and interview Jeannie Cocci and her daughter Linny as well. What's wonderful about this interview, and I know both Catherine and myself were really proud of this, is that we get to tell a lady that she did do something important in the war.
I'm in the midst of typing up your story at the moment, and it's fascinating all the things that you've told me.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You get a chance to correct it for me.
I probably won't think it's me, some other person. it haunts me, though. When I think of Bletchley, it does haunt me. Especially going up that lovely drive for the first time from Crawley Grange. We were told from London when we weren't typists or nurses or cooks or weren't any use to them, we were going to go on special duties. And it was the best quarters the Wrens have had in the whole country. So that was nice. And we got in a coach and we went into North Crawley, turned into a drive, and this gorgeous house. I thought, they're right. Are we going to be here? It's a beautiful house. And from there, we went daily into the park for training. But I thought I was going to live there, of course. But I was only there while I were trained. I was so sorry to leave it.
Where did you go from there?
From there, I went to Wavendon House.
And what was that like?
Quite a nice house. And it has a lovely lake and tennis courts.
Am I right in thinking that if you're in lovely surroundings for your accommodation, that's great, but a bit of a contrast with the work itself?
Oh, well, that was it. That was the thing that hit me hard. We weren't aware that they were concentrating on camouflage all the time. Camouflage, camouflage. So they wouldn't have a lot of Wrens together or a lot, it was a very sort of broken up. A huge kitchen was there for the Wavendon people living there. People fed us. But the actual huts we worked in were out of the kitchen. I remember walking across a lane and these little row of cottages, and between the cottages there was a passageway into a wood, and the huts were hidden in the wood. And probably, looking back, that was why they chose Wavendon, because it had camouflage woods around them.
That it had to not look important sky, didn't it?
No, exactly. And of course, the camouflage was ugly, but you couldn't make the house look bad. It was quite a nice house.
And there was a whole belt all around the home counties of these houses taken over, weren't there?
Oh, yes, there were. I wanted to know from you, didn't I, if they went to Woburn House, because there was a lovely programme on Woburn House. And I know Wren's went there, but I didn't know whether they worked there.
A good number of them were billeted there.
Billeted there.
But they were the ones that would be bussed in every day to Bletchley.
Yes, yes.
They tell me it was freezing.
Was it? Woburn Abbey.
It wasn't comfortable at all. And so they had a tea urn. When you came off a shift, rather than drink the tea, you didn't waste it on drinking it. You put it in your hot water bottle because it was so cold. For the best. So I think even though the work was grim, if your accommodation was comfortable, I think you were fairly lucky.
Mm.
Do you remember it being cold, Mum?
No, I don't remember, darling. I can't remember.
Did you make some friends that you stayed in touch with later?
Well, one or two. I had the list from you kindly sent me. I couldn't really recognise anybody because I honestly didn't. We didn't keep up with them because I was sort of invalided out of Wavendon. I got so tearful and wasn't eating, so I was useless.
Was that the shift pattern, do you think? How tiring it was?
Yes. Well, that and the loneliness of it at nights, working through the night alone. I had perhaps somebody come in would give me a sheet of what to, to put all the things in the right place.
Menu,
yes. But said hello and went out again. I signed a form there'd been. And then I was left on my own. And I'd had such a super few years before I would join the Reds that I loved company and I was brought up in a school. So, working on my own was horrid.
It was a shock, I should think.
At night, too, when you're normally in bed asleep,
Your mind does
suddenly
funny things to you.
You'd sort of sit there waiting for it to stop, and it would all stop. So you had to take everything off, get the papers out, look at the menu, put the next slot up, and then press the button, get it going, then sit down again and wait for it to go. Round it went, And you looked at it must be dawn soon, and you looked at it was sort of 11:30 or something, You said, oh, no.
Nothing drags like a night shift, does it? Did you used to do a whole week of nights at a time? Do you remember? It was quite grueling, wasn't it?
It would have been a week.
Were you not paired up on the bomb? Were you talking about working on your own? I've not heard of that before.
That's important. I've picked that up from what Jeannie has told me too.
Mm.
Our understanding usually was that the Wrens acted in pairs. And the reason it's had such an effect on Jeannie
was that I was on my own.
Quite so.
She
worked 8-hour shifts in the woods.
Not funny.
One bomb per hut, entirely on her own for 8 hours through the course of the night with these hot smokes.
People would come with the menu 2 or 3 times in the night, but you weren't on the right wavelength from working from midnight to 8 in the morning. You're usually in bed asleep, so it was hard to be awake anyway. It was odd.
So how did you come to be invalided out? Did you get so that you just felt poorly and couldn't?
I went off food and I was getting just low and tearful. And I don't know whether they'd had it before, but I had my bicycle up there, I think, and they sent me to a lovely, lovely family doctor in the village about 2 miles away. And I cycled there and I think he summed me up straight away that I was exhausted, and he recommended this girl should be sent to an outdoor job immediately. That's when I went down to Sheerness in the mail office in the dockyard, chatting up all the sailors.
That sounds better.
Better than being in the woods on your own at night, isn't it?
Well, we had a boat and an old crew of two real old sailors, lovely old boys, who used to take us out into the harbour of Sheerness when ships came in. And were we popular? We had all their mail on board. And we had the mail to pass to them alongside the ship. Huge ship. And out of one porthole there would come a glass, and out of the other porthole would be a gin and tonic to pass to me in the boat alongside with the mail. That was lovely. We went aboard sometimes too. And then we had a minesweeping one that went. We had a boat called Tudnow, St. Tudnow, but it was Tudnow, down the river that was... It was stationary. It was
moored.
Thank you, Linny. And it had an office on board for all the minesweepers. And of course, they were sort of old school public schoolboys, And having been to a boys' school, I was perfectly at home with them. And it was lovely taking their mail and having a little tot of rum and having a chat. I told you all this, didn't I?
You did.
It sounds like
was magic.
A good time.
That was where she met her husband.
Aha, yeah. Plenty of young men to choose from.
The minesweepers were mostly our NVR, sort of public school boys. And it was fun going aboard with their mail. It was lovely. It was nice.
It must have felt like going home after growing up in a boys' school.
Oh, it was. It was lovely. And I had a lovely, funny old van. I used to pick up the mail from the mail office in Sheerness and drive to Minster and places on the island with the mail. Of course, you were so popular as soon as you arrived because they knew what they brought you. But it was the latter part on the Isle of Sheppey was lovely. And the town was nice. And it was bubbling with Wrens and RAF and all sorts of WAFs and service people. I went over to Laysdown halfway. We used to go over to Minster, where there was an Air Force delivering there. At the far end of it, there were two old girls that had a huge bungalow, and they entertained all the service people that went there. They got so tiddly, two old girls, they got so tiddly. They used to feed us. We'd take drink with us because it would be off round ration. And they'd make us so welcome. We'd have such a real sort of civid evening, which was magic to go to. Well, you see how vivid my memory is. 94, it's as clear as a bell. A lovely photographic memory, which is great, because I can see all the good things apart from the bad. My dad didn't talk about the First World War at all. I've learned an awful lot since. I found photographs of the Cameron that was sunk in the Mediterranean, and he was taking out a group of men to Bombay. And they were torpedoed, and he had to sort of jump in the water with the last young man that couldn't swim, and all that. You know, he lost a lot of them, and he got picked up and taken to Malta, and from Malta they got him back. It must have been horrifying, and that's why when he was a headmaster of a boys' school, the only thing he would expel a boy from school was when they went to the swimming baths to push another boy in. They were taught never push another boy in the water.
I think there are some defining moments in your life, aren't there, that things that then shape the rest is stay with you. And maybe those horrible nights alone in the woods in that hut have stayed with you.
Well, so much happened afterwards when I left, the whole of Bletchley Park behind me, which I wasn't fit for, really. We were sent there because we weren't any used to it in other ways. I wasn't a nurse. I wasn't a cook. I wasn't this. I wasn't that. So it was an open field. They just sent, she's had a good schooling or been to a good school, we'll send her to Bletchley.
It's more the opposite.
I think they were looking for certain qualities. They seem to get...
Well, yes.
They'll have been observing you during basic training without you realising.
Oh, that wouldn't have done me any good, because when I was helping in the kitchen, they had a huge machine that was feeding the whole of the people in the building, the students and the staff, and we put the potatoes in and pressed the button, and off it went, peeling the potatoes, and I stopped it, and it all went all over the ceiling because I pressed it the wrong time.
And they put you on pioneering technology that we were relying on to find the U-boats.
We discussed the selection. You were saying that they asked you if you were keen on crosswords or puzzles, and none of which you were.
Yeah.
But then you told me that you felt that your selection was because you were a public school girl.
Yes.
And also because you were the only girl in an entire boys' public school.
Yes.
So it had a sense of independence and spirit about her.
Mm.
That's what you said to me, remember?
Mm.
Do you think that's probably what swung it?
Probably.
Nobody really knows why they were picked. Mm. It's all guesswork, isn't it? But it's interesting, isn't it, to think about what
stood you
out.
To get rid of me, really. I loved squadrille, all that. I loved all that movement, but when I had to scrub the chief officer corsets, I didn't fancy that.
Scrubbing corsets? Good grief. But you were scrubbing the chief officer's corsets?
Yes, in her private flat.
Had you done something wrong?
Hampstead Training Centre.
Was this a punishment?
Oh no, I think probably an honour.
You were saying that you weren't good enough to be a nurse or something else. They gave you a job at Bletchley. At that time, that was the most important role you could have had in the Wrens, because you were a Wren special duty.
That's right.
So you were more important than any of those other wrens.
Oh, my headmistress told me I was fit for nothing.
You were one of the select few.
The elite.
But no, we just want you to realise that you were special. It was a very select few that were selected.
There'd be something about you that was picked out as a different.
Absolutely. Of all of the different duties you could have been given in the wrens, yours was the most special.
You were entrusted with something very important. Looking a little bit more recently to when you approached about the oral history project and asked to share your memories, what did you think? Did you like the idea? Did you think it seemed odd that somebody would be so interested in
I love meeting people. It was fine.
Did you find that you remembered more than you thought you did when you started talking about it?
Yes, it does revive things in your memory. Yes, I think it does. Yes.
Of course, you put it all away in cold storage, as you said yourself, didn't you?
Yes.
So it all sat dormant for a while.
Well, yes, I don't ponder on the dark times.
No.
Too many lovely things have happened since.
Good, good.
Mm.
In this particular instance, Jeannie and I are friends. Linnie Arriva and I are friends. Linnie is Jeannie's daughter. And it came out quite by accident in conversation at a small reunion that they had a few weeks ago that Linnie's mother worked at Bletchley Park. And of course, my sister-in-law said, oh, my brother-in-law works at Bletchley Park too. And one thing has led to another. Mm. So I got in touch with the oral history department, Jonathan Byrne, and said, look, I've found another one. Can we do it? And although it's a little bit out of my catchment area, I begged to do this particular one because such a nice lady and we're friends. And that's how it came about.
There's lots of different people who are doing different jobs in different locations around the country and around the world. Does it feel like you're part of something bigger than you realised at the time, perhaps? You get more of a sense of what the bigger picture was. And
oh, yes. You didn't realise it till you left Bletchley, really.
Did you ever discuss any of your wartime work with Alan, your husband? Because he was in the Navy too. Did you discuss it with him?
Not really, because he didn't discuss what he did to me.
Mm.
We went through sort of civvy life and having a family of three and him getting going in business and sport. He was a great sportsman. And I was glad to pick up the things I liked, like amateur dramatics and things. I was destined for the stage anyway.
Well, you tried the boards before the war, didn't you?
Yes.
For a while.
Mm.
No wonder being on your own didn't sit so well.
No, have an audience. Exactly.
It's interesting just how important colour and vibrancy and life, if you like, is to you.
Yeah.
And so for me, so very easy to understand why in the dismal, dark bomb rooms,
thank you.
It would have had such a dreadful effect.
I know.
I find that very easy to understand.
Yes, I expect you do.
So few people do understand that, and that's important to tell that story.
Mm.
David, turning to you, obviously you get to come and bask in all the detail of these lovely stories.
Yes, it's a huge privilege. I never thought I would end up doing this as a voluntary job after I retired. And I've managed to swing it that I could interview 26 now to date. And I also transcribe other people's interviews. So I've done, I think, 27 of those to date. So what's that, 53? 53 in total. So by now I'm building up this huge picture, at least in my mind, of what the veterans did. But to answer your question more fully, yeah, it is an absolute privilege. Huge privilege. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
It's a few years that fit into the whole tapestry of someone's life. The war changed everything for everyone that was involved in it and lived through it. Everything became, you know, before and after. It's an important chapter in the life of everyone that lived through it. So you couldn't pick six other years in someone's life and say, well, you know, how did that shape the rest of your life? In quite the same way.
You are absolutely right. You know, it's remarkable. All the people that we speak to, by definition, were in very much their formative years. They're all sort of 17 and a half, 18, 19, very impressionable. So when they were told on pain of death that, you know, this was the Official Secrets Act and you will say nothing, otherwise you're likely to be shot, they took that very, very seriously. Mm-hmm. And that carried through many of them till they left us and never told us what they did.
Mm-hmm.
So you're absolutely right. It's a pivotal time in their lives. It would be a pivotal time in anyone's life. And they're all, including you, my dear, all so self-effacing. All think that, well, we didn't do much. We only just turned a few cogs or a few wheels. But sometimes it's my privilege to be able to say, just as you've done, you did far more than that. You did a great deal.
Oh, well.
It's important that the information is there for archivists and historians and authors and students and anybody who would want that. But it's additionally important for us at Bletchley Park so that we can make the experience more authentic, that it's absolutely true to what it was when you were there, so that visitors will get to understand and realise and appreciate and respect what you did. And I also find that it's important, once the story is finished, to be able to give a copy back to the family and have a copy of the sound recording as well. And that's something that will last for generations. So there's a threefold benefit for what we do. And I get an enormous kick out of doing this.
Your story is fascinating. Thank you very much for sharing it with us.
And
I hope it brings you some pleasure to think that it's captured in a lasting way now, and that when years and years from now people want to learn about what happened in intelligence in the Second World War, your story will be part of that.
Oh, well, simple as it was, of course, but just a cog in the wheel.
Thank you.
Pleasure to have you. I'm sure you're ready for some refreshment.